Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Now playing Open Floor.
This is Open Floor.
Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix back at it.
An NBA podcast with Sports Illustrated senior writer.
I think it's time that the world get to know
my guy Chris Mannix.
I think your opinion is shared by everyone.
And now it begins.
Now it begins. Bang!
This is the Open Floor podcast, where we talk about the NBA and all the biggest stories happening in it. And let me warn the audience right off the top. If you are tired of hearing about the Lakers and Clippers, if you don't want to listen to anything more about LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard or Bronny James or Paul George, this is probably not the episode for you. It has been an interesting couple of weeks in Los Angeles, and I do think it's worth unpacking exactly where these two franchises are as the dust kind of settles a little bit on this offseason. So we are going to do just that. Jovan Buha covers the NBA for The Athletic. He also hosts the video podcast Buha's Block, and he is back for what I am calling a State of Los Angeles Basketball episode. And the state of Los Angeles basketball at the moment is a bit uncertain after weeks of anticipation about free agency. The Lakers essentially stood pat. Meanwhile, the Clippers saw its co-star walk out the front door for nothing, with Paul George leaving LA to sign a four-year, $212 million contract with the 76ers. So, Jovan, I want to start with the Clippers because we got a lot of new information to digest this week. Paul George, who, like many players nowadays, has his own podcast, went on his show and I thought quite impressively unpacked everything that happened over the last 8 or 9 months. Here's a summary of what he said. In October, the Clippers offered George a two-year, $60 million extension. He deemed that disrespectful and he declined. Over the next few months, that per-year salary got up to north of $40 million. George still wasn't interested. In January, Kawhi Leonard signed a three-year, $153 million extension, and Paul George said that if the Clippers had offered him that exact same deal, he would have signed it. They didn't. After the season, which was one of the most efficient seasons of Paul George's career and the most durable since his days in Oklahoma City, the Clippers did offer that deal. But George, who at this point knew there was going to be a four-year offer out there for him somewhere, said he would take it only if he could get a no-trade clause. The Clippers said no to that. He then asked for a four-year deal from the Clippers. The Clippers said no to that. So George went into free agency and signed that four-year, $212 million deal with Philadelphia. I mean, there was a bunch of other things in this podcast, how he was close to going to Golden State, to how he and Kawhi Leonard almost wound up in Toronto years ago. I didn't know how close that was. I mean, it was really good stuff, during that episode. So what was your takeaway from all that information, that TikTok of events that Paul George provided?
Well, I was, as you just laid out, was really impressed with his recollection of the negotiations, because we rarely get a play-by-play of negotiations. It's usually summarized into just, I didn't like the offer, or they lowballed me, or you might hear a figure and it's the initial figure and you don't hear the back and forth, and just kind of like he kind of really went through of like, this is what I was thinking when they made this offer, this was my counter. And I thought it was just really fascinating to hear him break it down in the manner that he did. So that was really cool. Like, that was one of the, in my opinion, one of the highlights of like a player podcast. What was just, that's something you're unlikely to get in an interview unless they're willing to share that. So I thought that was really cool. But that aside, as someone like, I covered the Clippers for nearly 10 years, including my first 2 years as a beat writer. And one thing I learned with this front office and with this regime is they are nothing if not pragmatic. And it could border on, you could say, a little ruthless, because I think with time passing, people forget, but like the Lob City era did not end ceremoniously. Like, Chris Paul did not leave on good terms. Blake Griffin left on bad terms when he got traded to Detroit. And there was, I did a big feature when he came back to LA for his first game against the Clippers as a Piston. And both sides had two differing accounts as to how that whole situation went down, the information sharing in terms of the Clippers saying they were up front with Blake, that they were looking to trade him, Blake claiming that was not the case. And it's not to relitigate that situation. I just think that, like, this was how this era was always going to end if it didn't end with a championship and those guys riding out into the sunset. So it did not surprise me that this is how the situation went down. I also think, like, once Kawhi Leonard signed that extension in January, this was the way that this was trending. This was the way all the buzz was. He was attached to Philly for a couple of months now, and I wasn't surprised by how that played out either. But I do think it was interesting that, like, it seemed like there was a moment, I guess, where things could have turned and they could have mended the fence and they could have gotten on the same page, and ultimately that didn't happen. But now if you're the Clippers, like, I think the Clippers are still in a better position than some people are saying. Like, I've seen people put them at like 9th or 10th in the West. I think if you have a healthy Kawhi Leonard and James Harden, you're going to be better than that. However, there's no guarantees that Kawhi Leonard stays healthy and it stays healthy into the playoffs. So I totally understand. Like, I mean, they definitely took a blow losing Paul George and trying to replace him with Derek Jones Jr. and Nicholas Batum and Kevin Porter Jr. Like, it's like they're certainly worse than they were last season. But I still think Kawhi Leonard, when healthy last year, was a top 10 guy. James Harden had some pretty good moments. And they had that stretch there for about a month, month and a half, where they looked like the best team in basketball. So I know without Paul George, they're probably not going to look that way. But yeah, I wasn't surprised by it, just because this is how the Clippers have operated in this era of just like, they view stars in a very objective lens. And it's sort of like it's almost the opposite of the Lakers, who have had this tendency to overpay their stars and, and it's been more of like, what have you earned with the franchise? And with the Clippers, it's very much, what have you done for me lately? Where are you at right now? And we're going to operate that way.
But I get all that, but do you think they were operating objectively and pragmatically, 5-6 years ago, when they went out and effectively sold their souls to get Kawhi and Paul George to begin with? I mean, they gave Oklahoma City the kind of draft capital that is still paying off and will continue to pay off for the next couple of years. Like, that to me has to be part of this as well, right? Like, they're still paying off the Paul George debt. I believe they owe a pick next year, and then it's a pick swap the year after that. So they're still paying off those payments to Oklahoma City. And look, I understand a lot, and we're going to take Paul George's word for all this, because we don't have, the Clippers version of this story. But, like, I get offering him a short-term deal early, a two-year deal. See if he'll take it. Look, even if it's $40, $45 million, if you keep it at 2 years, that's beneficial for the franchise. But when they gave Kawhi Leonard that three-year, $150 million deal, for the life of me, I don't know why they wouldn't offer Paul George the exact same thing. I don't. But look, $50 million per year sounds like a massive number, and it is. But in today's NBA, it's the going rate for stars of that caliber. And Paul George was, at that point, in the middle of what was a very good season. The Clippers, in January, were humming. They won like 16-2 or some kind of stretch they were on. Once the Harden growing pains, they got through all that. I don't know why they wouldn't offer him that deal then. You know, putting him and Kawhi on the exact same path. That I don't get. Like, that would be my first question to Lawrence Frank and the front office in LA, you know, the next time they speak to the media. Like, you gave Kawhi this deal. Why wouldn't you give Paul George the exact same thing? Now, look, I'm one of the people that happens to think they'll be 9th or 10th in the West. Not because they're a bad team, but because the West is so damn good, right? Like, the teams that were out of the playoff mix last year, whether it's New Orleans, San Antonio, Houston, they're going to be better. The teams at the top, some of them took some hits, but, you know, Denver's still going to be Denver. And, you know, Dallas got a little bit better with Klay Thompson. I think the Warriors, yeah, they'll be right there in that mix. I just think it's going to be tough for the Clippers to win when they're at full strength. And to your point, I don't know if they're going to be at full strength all season long. What do you think of the fact that they didn't give Paul that three-year extension? Because that, to me, looms as maybe their biggest error.
Yeah, well, my read on that would then just be that they didn't view him as that caliber of player, fair or not. And I do think if you look at some of his recent playoff numbers, he has tended to, like, the production has dipped. And the scoring efficiency, and he has not been the same caliber of player in the regular season as he's been in the playoffs. Now, I think Paul could flip that and say, at least I've been available compared to Kawhi Leonard, right? But I think, and this gets into, because it was always, and this was always a weird part for me when I was covering them, because I was covering them that summer that they got both of those guys, and I covered their first season together, and they always tried to frame it as it wasn't a 1-2 combo. It was a 1A and a 1A, even though everybody knew Kawhi Leonard was the better player. I mean, he was coming off the 2019 title with the Raptors. At that point, some people considered him the best player in the world. And I think if we're being honest and we're ranking players, like, I think almost unanimously, people would have Kawhi Leonard ahead of Paul George, even when factoring in the injury history and some of the concern that comes with that. Kawhi Leonard is on the Olympic team. Paul George is not, just as, you know, an example. So I think, I guess that's sort of what I was trying to get at, was like, I feel like for them, it's if we don't feel like this player, you know, warrants this type of contract and can help us win a championship, then we're willing to move on. And going back to the Lob City era, it was like with Blake Griffin at that point, they were like, we don't think this guy can be the best player on a championship team anymore. So we're willing to trade him, clean house, and restart this rebuild, and they rebuilt pretty quickly, and they got Kawhi and PG. And I feel like this was their version of, okay, this is how we view Paul. We don't view him as like that top tier, top 15, even top 20 player anymore. We think he's taken a step back, and this is how much we're willing to pay him. And if he's not willing to take that, then we're going to have to move on. But I think the one thing that they sort of miscalculate, and they miscalculated, I think, in this situation, and even with the dealings with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, were like, these guys aren't these guys are humans, and that they're not spreadsheets, and that there's a human element to it that I think they have lacked at times. And that, to me, is the thing here, where, like, sure, in a negotiation, you're going to not start with your best offer, but you clearly lowballed him to the point that he was annoyed and offended throughout this whole process, where had you gone, you know, $5 to $10 million more than that, because what he said, 2 years, $60 million deal was the first offer, and like
that's
crazy. That's insane. Yeah, that's not like that. That is offensive. That is offensive. Like, if you're Paul George, that is an offensive offer. Like you needed to start it at least at 40 million, I think. So the fact that they started that low, I think kind of poisoned the process. And then it's like a matter of, are you even negotiating in good faith throughout this entire time? So like, I think that's the one thing, if I'm the Clippers, that I need to take a hard look at moving forward is like, I mean, on the one hand, like they've given the keys to Kawhi and they've basically done everything he's wanted throughout this process. So like you can't, I'm not going to say that they haven't done any catering to, superstars and sort of that like whole sort of nature of the business. But at the same time, I think when you're negotiating and when you're looking to potentially move on from a star, I think how you handle that matters. And there is a bit of a pattern here of these things really ending in these weird ways with them, where the star comes out feeling like they were offended or blindsided or what not. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't know what the play is now moving forward, because look, whatever you think of their slot in the Western Conference next year, they're not a championship team. Even if in the best of scenarios, they're not a championship team. They don't have flexibility this year to do anything. In fact, what they did this year with the flurry of kind of mid-level signings that they made, it just screamed, I don't want to give a lottery pick to Oklahoma City. Like that was, to me, that's what it felt like. Like we're going to sign a whole bunch of guys that are okay, that can play in our rotation, that will keep us just competitive enough in case Kawhi goes out, to avoid bottoming out and giving Oklahoma City a high draft pick and what is expected to be a great draft next year. Now, I think they've got some flexibility next summer when some of these contracts come off the books, but they've got to start paying guys, right? Like if you want to keep Zubac, you got to pay him. If you want to keep Terrence Mann, you've got to pay him. So they're challenged here. And again, it comes down to this. Like you gave up a lot for Paul George. It didn't work out. A lot of the reasons it didn't work out was because there were injuries, most notably to Kawhi Leonard year after year. But if you're going to try to get something out of this group, you got to bite the bullet. Got to keep them together for three more years. I mean, all I heard, and I'm sure you heard the same things, for the last like 8 months was how, Steve Ballmer wants a competitive team going into that new building. You know, he wants star power. Now he's got some star power in Kawhi and James Harden. By the way, they turned around and gave James Harden 2 years and $70 million. Like that is, who were they competing against with that? Like who was out there willing to offer James Harden that type of deal? I just don't know what the midterm play is. Obviously, you're trying to win with Kawhi Leonard over the next 3 years. To do that, you need more. And say what you want about Paul George, but if Paul George had been back and healthy, him, Kawhi, Harden in the playoffs, that would have been a pretty good mix. It would have been a pretty good starting point to win. So that's my biggest question. Like where do they go now? Like what is the what's the next domino to fall? Like do they trade one of these pieces that they have and try to get somebody that way? Do they try to use some of that flexibility that they might have next summer to sign somebody else? I just don't know. I don't know, man.
And the funny thing with that too, though, is that with the Harden contract, this kind of shows like that they weren't necessarily congruent with how they were handling both guys, because that seems like not necessarily an overpay for James Harden's production, but certainly an overpay given the market. And as you just said, like, who are they competing against? So with Harden, they handled it one way of just like, we're going to throw this guy a contract that he's going to not even have to think about and just sign. And there's going to be no competition in the market, but we're going to keep him happy. And with Paul George, it was like pulling teeth and sort of more like, okay, we're going to go back and forth and we're going to drag this out throughout the season. And then eventually we get to the offer that he wanted from the beginning, but now he wants this no trade clause and now we're not willing to give it to him. So it was interesting that like they clearly, I mean, they were offering Paul George more money than James Harden. So I think they view him in a higher light, but I mean, based on at least how they dealt with the personalities, they clearly were just like, with Harden, we're just going to give them this to come to an agreement quickly. With Paul, this is much more of a negotiation, and I think they just miscalculated it.
I mean, that's the other thing, too. I would have given them no trade clause. If that's what it came down to, I would have given them that. Because, look, Every star player effectively has a no trade clause anyway. Like, you're not trading a star player to a market that he doesn't want to go to, except for the rarest of circumstances, right? Because you don't want a disgruntled guy. You want a guy that wants to be there, that wants to be part of what you're building with that team. Like if you're willing to pay the Kawhi Leonard type deal to Paul George, and it came down to giving him that no trade clause. It's 3 years, not five. Like, you're trying to win, obviously, this year with this group. You'd probably try to win again next year with Harden under contract. The only year that could potentially get dicey is in year three. And then it's not that you can't trade Paul George. You just need his agreement on a deal. And you can work with him on stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Say, all right, you give us a list of teams that you want to go to, and we'll come up with a solution. I'm anxious to have Lawrence Frank sit down and talk again about all this and how it all played out, because I don't know what the calculus here is for the Clippers. I don't know how they get this team with this group on a path to winning a championship. All right, from one franchise with some problems to another, the Los Angeles Lakers, after a lot of anticipation, I thought, Jovan, going into this offseason that they might make a deal, swing a trade, using draft assets to get a big-name player, they effectively wind up with nothing. They effectively are bringing back the same group that they finished last season with. Bronny James, of course, is going to be part of that mix. Dalton Connect, who, according to some of the people I'm reading, is going to be a Hall of Famer in year one. he is going to be part of this mix. I guess start there. Give me a reaction to kind of where we are with the Lakers, where an offseason with some significant expectations kind of fizzled out.
It's been surprising. It's been surprising because there were a lot of things that went the Lakers' way in terms of before the offseason that you thought indicated they could make some moves, where first you have a guy in Dalton Connect who, by all accounts, was a projected top 10 pick and a top 10 prospect, and he slips out of the top 10 to the Lakers at number 17. So, because one of the things with them was, like, if they were going to trade that 17 pick, you kind of had to have a deal in place in most scenarios, where once you make that pick loses a certain level of value. But, you know, having a guy like Connect fall to you at 17, I'm sure there were going to be several teams that were interested in potentially acquiring that pick and being like, well, this is a guy that we had top 10 on our board. He's now making a number 17 salary. And like that 17 pick ended up probably having even more value than it initially was projected to have. So like that was a win for the Lakers, Dalton Connect slipping to them from like an asset perspective, to say nothing of like his performance. Then you have D'Angelo Russell opt in on an expiring deal, nearly $19 million. And this is now the type of contract that you could cobble together with one of your other mid-sized contracts and, you know, get into the $30 to $40 million range to get a higher impact player if you are willing to throw in a pick or two pick or even three picks. And then you have LeBron James willing to take a discount, according to multiple reports. And you know, so now you're opening up a scenario where you could trade two, three mid-sized salaries, a pick or two, and get an impact player. You could also have LeBron take this discount and then sign a Klay Thompson or a Jonas Valanciunas, or, I mean, the list was pretty short. Those were like the only two realistic guys, but let's just say like one of those two guys. And all of a sudden you're looking at this roster of, you know, you've kept Austin Reeves, maybe you've kept like a Rui or Jared Vanderbilt. So you have some level of continuity, but then you've upgraded with a new player in a trade, one of these higher impact, non-taxpayer mid-level exception guys, and you're starting to like this roster a bit more. But they struck out on all of LeBron's targets. James Harden, to me, I mean, as we just discussed, like, that was never realistic. He signed for nearly three times as much as the non-taxpayer MLE. So once I saw James Harden, I was like, no, like, that's not happening. Klay was in the neighborhood, and the Lakers, I heard and others have reported, the Lakers were trying to create a four-year, $80 million deal for Klay. So they were willing to offer more than Dallas. And with state taxes, maybe that ends up being like pretty close. But the Lakers were trying to, and that fourth year could matter for Klay with where he's at in his career. Then Jonas Valanciunas signed for less than the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, and he signed in Washington, so that one didn't really, like, I was a bit confused by that. And then DeMar DeRozan ends up getting, obviously, the contract that he just got from Sacramento, and that was a sign-and-trade for a higher annual rate than what the Lakers were willing to offer for Klay. So I don't think that one was ever really in play other than him being on LeBron's list. So you look at it now, and they're basically running back the team from last season with Dalton Connect and Bronny James replacing Torian Prince and Spencer Dinwiddie. So on paper, that's probably a downgrade, at least from like the depth of the roster. But I'm actually I'm kind of zagging here, where everyone is piling on the Lakers. And like, look, I think they need to make some type of move. And I think that they still have like a month here or so, or at least a couple more weeks to try and figure something out. But if you go back to last season, the biggest thing was, at least in my opinion, and I know several people with the Lakers' opinions, was a lot of it came down to them not playing the right lineups and the right rotations. And you saw when they inserted Rui Hachimura into the starting lineup for Torian Prince on February 3rd. From that point on, Lakers went 22-10, fifth best record in the league, fourth best record in the West, and third best offense in the league. We're just 22nd in defense, but they were also missing Jared Vanderbilt for most of that stretch. So like, if you talk to people with the Lakers, they felt like last season was mismanaged, and that was a big reason why they moved on from Darvin Ham. And if JJ Redick comes in and is on the same page with the front office, and they are playing if you go back and look at the Lakers last couple of years, their best lineups have tended to be LeBron, AD, Austin, D'Lo, and then either Jared Vanderbilt or Rui Hachimura in that fifth spot. And that was not the case last year for the first 50 to 60 games of the season. So they feel like if you replayed last season with Rui starting from day one, they're a 4 or 5 seed. And Darvin Ham's probably still the coach. And we're talking about, they were playing the Clippers or the Mavericks in round one. And who knows, maybe they lose or maybe they win a round, whatever. But like, I think we view the season a bit differently. So I currently tentatively view them as the fifth best team in the West still. Wow. Now, will they have the fifth? I know it's a hot take, but will they have the fifth best record is a different story. But when you look at like they had a winning record against the Warriors, against the Clippers, against the Suns, against the Pelicans, like they beat all those teams. And it's not head to head doesn't necessarily dictate where you are in the conference. But like, if you actually look at it, Denver and Sacramento were the only two teams they've struggled with over the last 2 years. And I think they're better than Sacramento. Denver, I think, is obviously still better, even with losing KCP. But I tentatively put them as like, if I'm ranking the teams to get out of the conference, I would put them fifth. Now, in the regular season, I'd still probably put them like seventh, maybe eighth, because I think LeBron and AD aren't going to be as healthy as they were last year. But
that's the caveat.
That's the caveat. But like, if they can replicate, I mean, if they can stay healthy, I think they're right there with anyone else in the conference outside of those. Like the top four are, there's a gap there. There's for sure a gap between the top four and everyone else.
You know, you mentioned the rotations. Like, you know, Darvin Ham's not an idiot. And, you know, Rob Pelinka, I'm sure, spent a lot of time talking to Darvin Ham. All these rotation switches that you're talking about, and we saw Darvin Ham make a lot of changes over the course of the season, you know, briefly putting LeBron at point guard, moving D'Angelo Russell in and out of the lineup, repairing Russell and Austin Reeves. Like, why do you think he made some of these decisions? Like, were they missteps, or was it, you know, was he a victim of circumstance? Like, one of the ways I think the Lakers can organically grow is just having some of the guys back healthy that you mentioned. I mean, Jared Vanderbilt, what do you go out? The Boston game, you know, mid-season? Like, that was a huge loss. Like, Jared Vanderbilt was their Swiss Army knife defender, could defend from, like, Steph Curry to, you know, power forwards at times in the Western Conference. That hurt them a lot. Gabe Vincent was never a factor with this team. Played 11 games last year. That was a guy that was a starter for Miami's finals team a couple of years ago. So, you know, in a way, I think Darvin was victimized by the roster that he had. In what ways do you think that the rotations will be sharper this year, or can be sharper this year with JJ?
So it's a good question. And I think, you mentioned Jared Vanderbilt, Gabe Vincent. I look at those two guys as those are arguably their two best perimeter defenders. And now, of course, like, you know, if we're talking about like, look, Jared Vanderbilt's a really good defender. So I don't want to diminish like his impact, because it's just that was a talking point throughout the season of like the pushback on the Lakers and any sort of defense of them was like, well, we're talking about Jared Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent here. Like, how good are those guys actually? And for a team that does not have a lot of plus perimeter defenders, they're actually really important, like, right? So especially Vando, like Vando, when he's like healthy and playing his game, is like an all defense caliber defender. Now the problem with him is that he can't shoot and he's very limited offensively. So that creates some problems for you in terms of like how you use him. But Jared Vanderbilt at 6'8", 6'9", super athletic, long, it's switchable, as you just said, can basically guard 1 through 4 and even 1 through 5, depending on the center. Like, that's a very important piece for them. And that was a big piece in them making the Western Conference Finals in 2023. So they missed him for over half of last season. Gabe Vincent was their non-taxpayer mid-level signing, and they basically missed him for the entire season. He played 12 games. Mm-hmm. So that, and as you said, starter on the, and like they wanted him in that Dennis Schroeder role where it was like basically D'Angelo Russell insurance, where if D'Lo was having a bad game, Dennis would close for him and he would give you a bit of, you know, more defense and a bit of a guy that didn't need the ball as much as D'Lo did. So that's how they viewed Gabe Vincent, as like a plus catch and shoot guy and a guy who could hound the ball and give us a different look when D'Angelo Russell is maybe struggling or out or whatever. So I think those two guys, like, in a way, those are almost like free agent additions for them. Is like, if you look at the top 8 or 9 of this year's Lakers team, I actually like it better than last year's top 8 or 9 when factoring in the injuries, because Vando and Gabe were not in that top 8 or 9. Now, the end of the roster is where there's some major concerns for me, because you have Jalen Huccifino, Maxwell Lewis, and Bronny James, who at this point, I don't think any of those three are capable of being even like fill in rotation guys in the regular season. And that's to say nothing of a guy like Cam Reddish, who had like a couple of flashes, but still continues to be like a fringe NBA guy. So you might have like four guys on your roster that you don't feel comfortable with playing in a regular season game. And that's fine if you're healthy. But if LeBron or AD goes out, or even a Jared Vanderbilt or Gabe Vincent goes out again, now all of a sudden you're relying on guys that you probably shouldn't be relying on if you're trying to be a contender or even a good playoff team. So that's my biggest concern with them right now. And that's where like they could do some form of consolidation trade of, you could trade a Christian Wood and a Cam Reddish and attach a second round pick or two to one of these cap space teams. Right now it's Utah or it's Detroit, and dump those guys basically on those teams, create a couple of open roster spots, and then either sign a vet minimum player and just kind of keep that flexibility, or depending on how much money you clear, you could even sign a taxpayer mid-level guy, and then you're hard capped at the second apron. But still a guy that I've heard in recent weeks has been Gary Trent Jr. That's probably lower than what he wants his market to be, but you know, potentially he's available if there isn't much of a market for him. Or even bringing back a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, who had some good moments for them, though did struggle a bit at the end of the season and in the playoffs. So like they have some options to improve the back end, which I think is really key, because you like depth really matters in 2024 in the NBA. And I like the top 8 and maybe even the top 9. I don't like spots like 10 through 15 on this roster. And that's a problem, I think, in 2024.
I think the defense is going to be a big problem for them next year. Right now, as we speak, Anthony Davis is the starting center, and he's being backed up by Jaxson Hayes and Christian Wood. Anthony Davis remains an elite big man, whether it's power forward or center. Defensively, everybody else is not. Like, Christian Wood is quite frankly one of the worst defensive bigs in the NBA. He is. Jaxson Hayes maybe a little bit better, but he's not anything more than a rim protector. And you look up and down that depth chart, and where are the stoppers? We've seen enough from D'Angelo Russell to know he's not a defensive stopper. Austin Reeves is solid. I'll give him that at that position. Vanderbilt can defend. We'll see what Gabe Vincent has after being out for basically an entire year. But Dalton Kinect, the knock on him coming into the draft was that defense was his weakness. Like, he can shoot it. He's NBA ready when it comes to offense. But defensively, what is he going to be able to give? Like, I have a hard time, Jovan, seeing this team climb out of the bottom third of the NBA in defensive efficiency. I just do. And if you're not at least in the middle of the pack, like if you're in the middle of the pack and have an elite offense, then you can succeed to some level in the NBA. But if you're, and I don't even know if the Lakers have an elite offense, but if you're in the bottom third of the NBA in defensive efficiency, there's just no way to win. There's no way to win. And I'm not sure how the Lakers measurably improve on that end of the floor. I think we're going to be talking about that a lot in the first quarter of next season. Like, can this team get enough stop? Like, even LeBron, like, LeBron's be 40. Like, let's just be real. Like, he can still dial it up and do things defensively in closing minutes of games, but he's going to be 40 years old. He's coming off a tour with the Olympic team. Like, I don't know that you're going to, I do know you're not going to be able to count on him for 30 plus minutes of solid defense every single night. I don't know how much smoke and mirrors you can create around Anthony Davis to make yourself a top half of the NBA defensive team.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think so going back to that 32 game stretch that they had after they started Rui Hachimura. So you had several for several stretches of that run, you had all five starters averaging 15 or more points per game. And you had actually, I feel like this flew under the radar because this was such a like an insane box score from one night. But they had this game where they absolutely demolished the New Orleans Pelicans. They won by like 30 points, and it was the first time since 1993 that a team had all five starters score 20 or more points in the same game. And so looking at, like, I think they have the offensive firepower with that group of AD, LeBron, Rui, Austin, and D'Lo. Last year, they switched to a five-out offense from a four-out the previous season, and it really unlocked D'Angelo Russell. But Rui continued to improve as a shooter, and having, like, Austin Reeves sometimes be the fourth or fifth option really spoke to how much firepower they had offensively. So I think from an offensive perspective, again, like over that stretch, they were third in the league. They were number one and number two for various stretches. So like, I feel like the firepower is there in terms of the offense. It really comes out to the defense. Cause again, they're 22nd over that stretch. And that is in line with what you were saying as being like a bottom 10 defense. So if I look at the blueprint for how they can be effective, I think it's like a top five offense and like 15 to 20 defense, like 15 to 20th defensively. And that's where like you can be a good team. You're not going to be a great team, and you're not going to beat, again, I think those top four teams in the West. But it really all comes down, like, for me, it comes down to like the health of LeBron and AD. Like, can you get those guys healthy again? And you're going to have to be mindful of their minutes and just the workload, especially coming off the Olympics. Because we saw with Austin Reeves, he was in a slump to start the season last year. And that was part of why he was benched after the ninth game of the regular season. Like, I didn't agree with it. I felt like a couple months earlier, Darvin Ham was calling him a future all-star. And if this guy's a future all-star, you don't necessarily move that guy to the bench just nine games in. But he did start the season slow. And part of it was he didn't have his legs under him, and he was battling through some injuries. So you can see like the toll of Team USA could certainly be a factor here for the Lakers entering next season. But I'm with you. Like, I think looking at, so some of the names I've heard attached to them over the last few weeks have been Jeremy Grant, Kyle Kuzma, Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith, like varying degrees of a 3-and-D wing, a guy in that like 6'7 to 6'9 range who can credibly catch and shoot, spot up, doesn't necessarily need to be like a primary guy with the ball, but can also defend at least a couple of positions, 2 and 3, 3 and 4, 2 through 4, depending on the player. So like those guys, they move the needle for me a little bit. I do think they elevate the Lakers depending on what's the price and how much of your depth can you retain. But at the same time, it's like, it's just hard to find that type of guy. Cause ideally, like it's a Mikal Bridges, right? But there's only one Mikal Bridges and only one. He just went for 5 first round picks. The Lakers don't have 5 first round picks to trade. They only have 2 now. So it gets tricky for them. But I think at a minimum, they need to consolidate the back end of the roster and improve it. And as you were talking about the centers, like, I think they could use a more defensive minded center and a guy who could, no one's going to replace Anthony Davis, but can you not, can you just like tread water and not have it be a layup line when he's off the floor for 8 to 12 minutes a night in the at least in the regular season, and then you can figure it out in the playoffs. But like, I think they need that guy, and then they need a better 3-and-D wing, and ideally someone better than like Rui and Vando. And if they can get those, like if they can plug those two holes, I think this team is like still again like they played really well against Minnesota. They won the season series against OKC. They played really well against Dallas. Denver's been their kryptonite. They can't figure them out. But like, they've done really well against most of the West. It's really just been a couple teams that have been a thorn in their side. So like, if they're, I mean, there's a lot of ifs here. If they're healthy, if they can find these trades, I think they have a puncher's chance. It's just that's easier said than done. And the health factor is the biggest thing, because it's been an issue for multiple years now. They finally were healthy, but then everything else around them was kind of chaos and didn't really work. So they're in an unenviable position right now.
The problem is like the they need a 3-and-D wing and a defensive minded center. Well, everybody wants a piece of those types of guys, right? Like,
these guys are valuable.
I love the idea of getting Jeremy Grant for that team, but like, his contract is huge. I don't know how many guys you'd have to trade to go and get him. Plus, the Blazers would probably want some draft capital
at least,
back. That's a tough deal to construct. And look, AD, in addition to needing a break at times, also doesn't love still the idea of playing center full time, like especially against some of the bigger teams in the NBA. So that's definitely a priority. I just don't know who's out there. Like, the center market dried up pretty quick, a lot faster than I thought it was going to. I mean, you saw Drew Eubanks get a 2-year deal. You know, these guys were just getting signed left and right. You know, Valanciunas quickly gobbled up with a 3-year deal with the Wizards. So I don't know. I mean, you brought up USA Basketball too. Like, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, is there any general manager for any team that wants their player playing with USA Basketball right now? Like, any? Like, think about it. Like, are the Clippers happy that Kawhi Leonard is out there saying, my knee just started to feel right 2 weeks ago, so I'm going to play for USA Basketball and travel around the world for a couple of weeks? Joel Embiid, think the Sixers want him there? I mean, Steph Curry in his mid-30s, at least Steve Kerr can monitor him from up close. LeBron, same thing. Like, I understand, for younger guys, you get a good bounce from USA Basketball. Like, Cooper Flagg, I'm sure I said, he's going to go home ecstatic after the way he played in that scrimmage. That was unbelievable to watch.
Crazy.
But, you know, we might be talking in December about the hangover from the 2024 Olympics for some of these guys. Last thing for you, on LeBron, do you get any sense that, like the Lakers' moves have in part made me feel like they're really starting to think about the post-LeBron James era? Because, you know, they weren't willing to just dump their draft picks in a deal for DeJounte Murray or Trae Young or any of the guys that might have been available. And they're building a team that, you know, might be good in 3 years when LeBron is long gone. Like, how tricky do you think this balancing act is going to be? Because LeBron said all the right things during his interviews with USA Basketball. Said, we're going to go to work, we're going to do everything we can. But you know LeBron. Like, you get around the trade deadline and the consternation starts to kick in. And he starts to look at some of these draft assets the Lakers have and say, hey, I took a couple million bucks of a pay cut to get you under that apron. Let's make a deal. Let's deal these picks in 20, 30, whatever, to get a player that can help me win right now. It strikes me that the Lakers are right now trying to thread the thinnest of needles where they're putting together a team that can maximize LeBron's last year or two in the NBA, but also thinking about what the post-LeBron James era is going to look like.
I think it's impossible to do. That's just where I'm at with it. I don't think you can balance the present and the future when we're talking about needing a 3-and-D wing and a better defensive-minded center. Like, you have to use your draft cap. Like, you don't have... It'd be one thing if you were swimming in, like, these young players on good contracts that you could flip. But, you know, one, they have refused to include Austin Reeves in a lot of these trade talks for, like, you know, Atlanta would have done it if they would have traded DeJounte Murray to them at the 2024 trade deadline had the Lakers been willing to put Austin Reeves in the deal, and they chose not to. And in their opinion, like, they view Austin as, like, you know, if they get some type of upgrade as like the third best guy, they love him in like that number four spot. And they view him as like he's making less than $15 million a year. And when you look at, he's had these moments as like the number three guy there, that type of guy making less than $15 million is a great contract. Like, he has one of the best non-rookie contracts in the league when looking at his production and how much he's actually making. So like, they've really valued him at a high level. But then that also, like, he's one of the few guys that actually has trade value outside of LeBron and AD. And now that Max Christie re-signed and he can't be traded for a bit, like he was someone I'd heard might have a market potentially if he hit restricted free agency. Like, they just don't have a lot of these guys that teams across the league want. And maybe, like, I've heard there are some teams that are interested in Rui, and like there are teams that like Vanderbilt, and you know, there might be a D'Lo suitor or so, but like, it's rare to find a team that wants like two or three of these guys. It's usually just one of them that they have an interest in. And that complicates matters for the Lakers, where now they're getting asked for, give us both first round picks for like this player who is like a fringe starter and he's going to upgrade your team, but he's not worth two first round picks. And there's sort of like a leverage tax there with them, where people know that because of LeBron, because of the situation, and because of their limited assets to improve the roster, it's always like, give us everything. And if you're not willing to give us everything, then we're not going to do business with you. But I look at the recent report that Walker Kessler, Utah's asking for a first round pick for him. Like, I would love that fit. I think if the Lakers could find it, and he's only making $2.9 million. So from a salary perspective, it could be a little tricky to like match that. And maybe you have to expand the trade a little bit. But like, if you could somehow give you know, one of your first round picks for a Walker Kessler, like, I think that kind of checks a couple boxes where he could start.
It's gonna be two to get him. I'm telling you,
you think it's gonna be like, two.
I think it's gonna be two. I think there's going to be enough teams out there willing to give a first to get Walker Kessler. Danny Ainge is going to up the ante and get two. I don't think it's going to be one first round pick for Kessler.
Well, then yeah, so then that's something that they have to think about. And what I will say is, like, I think the Lakers first round picks should have a lot of trade value, because if I'm betting against the Lakers in 2029 and 2031, like, I would love to take that bet, because at that point, LeBron, I mean, theoretically LeBron's retired. I don't know anymore. But LeBron would be what?
It 45? Is
5 years from now. Yeah. So LeBron's going to be 45 and AD is going to be 36, 37 in 2029. And then, what, 38, 39 in 2031.
So going to have,
yeah. So like, if I could get the one or both of those picks, like, I mean, it makes sense why teams are asking for both. It's just, for them, like, I think, but to your point about LeBron, like, I think the Lakers are at this crossroad here where they have to make a decision. Do we prioritize the future and we stand pat? And because really, if you look at like the like, they didn't make a move at the 2024 trade deadline. And the reasoning at the time was, well, we'll have three picks to trade in the summer. We could go make a bigger move. And the implication was they were going to go after a Trae Young, a Donovan Mitchell, a DeJounte Murray again, a Darius Garland, some type of whoever was the star that was going to be available. The Lakers were going to go after that player with three picks and try to get them. Obviously, it takes two to tango, as LeBron said. But like that was going to be the strategy. Now, I mean, Donovan Mitchell signs the extension. DeJounte Murray gets traded to New Orleans. Darius Garland, there hasn't been much buzz with him in the trade market. And then Trae Young switches agencies.
There could
agencies.
Be, though. I think there could be with Darius Garland. I don't,
and he's a clutch
I don't
guy.
Know that. Yeah, I don't know that the Cavs are wed to bringing him back. I know that Kobe Altman, after the season, threw out all these statistics about how Garland and Mitchell work. I just don't know if today's NBA you can play two guys that size and win at the highest of levels, especially like if you're going up against Boston. Like, can you do it with, you know, them rolling out Jrue Holiday and Jaylen Brown at the guard spots, or Jrue Holiday and Derek White? Like, it's just to me, it's challenging to. It's a long way of saying I do think Garland could become available in the weeks ahead.
And maybe he becomes available, but like you had Trae Young switch agencies where he's now, you know, I've heard is not as likely to go because he went from clutch to CAA. And so like that 3-star build, and the Lakers have pushed back against it privately and publicly in terms of like the 3-star build. So now it's like, okay, well, then you need to make some upgrades to the roster, and they haven't. And in my opinion, actions speak louder than words. And like they can say they're going for it. They can say that they're trying to build the best roster around LeBron and AD, and they believe in them. But until they back that up with actions, it's kind of hard to take that at face value, right? Because you're just looking at it like, okay, well, if you believe in these guys, why haven't you put the picks on the table? And why have you been so cautious with using the picks? And like, I totally understand the notion of like negotiations and you don't want to overpay. But at the same time, LeBron and AD have a 1 to 2 year window. Like, let's just call it what it is. They have a 1 to 2 year window here to try and win another championship, 2 years max. And if you're going to, if you're just going to kick the can down the road and say, well, we're going to wait till January, February to try and find the best deal, it's like, well, now you have another half season of D'Angelo Russell and other guys being in trade rumors. That's going to affect the chemistry and the continuity and all that stuff to some extent. And guys just having to deal with that. And then now you're remaking the roster midway through the season again, and you have to figure out your new starting lineup, your new rotation, and guys have to get reps and build that chemistry. So it's just, I think it's like that could, I'm not saying it can't work. I'm not saying that's not the best strategy depending on like what trades are actually available to them right now. But I think they really have to make a decision here in the next few weeks as to, are we going all in? And all in means we are trading one or both picks and we're making this roster better. Maybe we can't hit the home run that takes us to like a Boston or Dallas or OKC level. And they probably can't. I don't see a trade out there that would put them on that level. But you either got to go for it or you don't. And it's really like that simple to me. And if they don't, that to me signals that they're prioritizing the future. And it's about, you know, this isn't about LeBron and AD. It's about AD and player X, star X in the future. And like, how does that roster look?
Yeah. Last thing quickly. You got to look at Bronny in Sacramento this week. Only played one game for the Lakers in that California Classic Summer League. Any takeaways that you can take from, you know, watching Bronny for the first time?
Yeah. So I think you see the physical tools for sure. And he had a couple moments where, he had a nice steal where he, could kind of was reading the defense and jumped a passing lane. And then that ignited a fast break for them. Also had a couple of nice deflections. So defensively, you see, he also had a couple of welcome to the NBA moments early where he got dropped once and then he got bulldozed once, smacked by a screen. So I think it's certainly an adjustment for him. And to be honest, I know with the combine measurement, he came in smaller than expected, but he also looked small out there. This was Summer League, and that was Summer League against the Kings B team. Yeah, that, like the Kings, I guess have two Summer League teams, and that was like the number two team. And even against them, Bronny looked small. So like that's something he's gonna have to overcome. Now that said, offensively, I thought his ability to shot create was interesting. Of like he got some pretty good looks, and the ball handling. And now I don't think the Lakers want him doing that necessarily at the NBA level. And I think he's gonna be much more of like a 3-and-D. They played him exclusively off the ball. He was never bringing the ball up the floor. It was not a point guard.
Is that sustainable to you? Like trying to find that mold that is the Davion Mitchell, Marcus Smart, the 6'2", 6'3", defensive-minded guy that finds a niche in the NBA. Those guys are so rare. Like to me, Bronny's going to have to find a way to be a point guard, like one way or the other, or else it's just not going to work. He is, for the NBA and for a two-guard position, I don't know if he has the size for it. I just don't. I see what you're saying. I was watching the same things. Like he's playing off the ball. I think to be successful in the NBA, he's got to develop point guard skills. That's just my take on it.
Yeah. I think like the one way to make it work is you have to become a really, really good catch and shoot guy where it's like teams cannot. Because that was like they were going under screens or kind of giving him some space as well. So part of it was like teams or the Kings rather sort of like goading him into taking jumpers. And he made a couple, you know, did struggle overall. I think finished what, like 2 for 9, something like that. But I thought the aggression was there. And again, like, I thought he played within the confines of the offense. And it was like, look, like the buzz in the building was crazy. Like there was anytime he touched the ball, you could hear this buzzing sound. And in the pregame warmups, and like all eyes were on Bronny for the loudest cheers of the day were when Bronny scored the two baskets. He hit a layup around a curl off of a dribble handoff, and then also had this nice behind the back dribble into a fadeaway jumper. And like those were the two moments of the game that the crowd, like that was what they were there for, was to see Bronny and to see him score. So like he's dealing with a certain level of scrutiny and attention already, even in summer league, that is rare for rookies, right? And it's really reserved for like the top picks. And there's a reason why. I don't know if you saw the NBA summer league poster, but it's him and and Sar as the two faces of NBA summer league, and that's pretty crazy. But like you know, that's the status he's at from like a stardom perspective. But it's tough because there's a reason why he was the number 55 pick. There's a reason why some people felt like he shouldn't have been drafted. And like, there's going to be a drastic learning curve from him. But I will say, like, you see the physical tools again in terms of like the athleticism, the speed, and the frame. Like, I think even though he is a bit smaller, like he's got like the stocky, sturdy frame.
Yeah.
Where I think he's going to be able to handle the physical blows. It's just a matter of like, if he is 6'1", 6'2", in shoes and defending 6'6", 6'7", guys, like that does get a little tricky. So to me, he's got to become a like lights out catch and shoot guy. And he's also got to become like a lights out defender. And again, he's been a good defender. You see the potential on that end, but can he ramp it up to that like Marcus Smart, prime Patrick Beverly, like that type of level where it's going to be tough. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. And I think it's going to be like multiple years most likely. Right. Like, so right now the plan is he's going to be in the G League for basically, you know, most of the season. And I'm sure there'll be the time where he gets the call up and he plays with LeBron and they share the floor. And like, that's going to be a cool moment. But outside of that, this year and probably even next year are going to primarily be G League years for him. And then we'll start to see how he continues to develop.
Yeah. And for every Patrick Beverly, Davion Mitchell, Marcus Smart, there are like 50 or 60 guys that don't make it. And you'll see a lot of them at Summer League, right? Like a lot of these guys that have been part of Summer Leagues for 3 or 4 years that just don't have the size for it. I went to about half a dozen USC games last year, and I do think he has the defensive instincts and the length and the reflexes and all the things that can make him at least a serviceable defensive player. But he's got to your point, become a better catch and shoot player, and I think he's got to be a point guard. I look, these smaller guys, you know, Beverly is a de facto point guard. Davion Mitchell plays between both positions. Marcus Smart, look, Boston made him their starting point guard that year they went to the finals. Like he had success as a multi-position defender coming off the bench, but you know, they eventually had to make him a point guard, and he is a point guard now in Memphis. So, you know, those are the things he's gonna have to work on. Certainly long runway for him to do that. I agree. He'll be enjoying that South Bay experience with the Lakers next season. Jovan, great stuff, man. I appreciate you sticking around to talk about all this. Check out Jovan over at The Athletic, Buha's Block on YouTube and in podcast form. Great stuff, man. Thanks for joining me.
Appreciate it, Chris.